When it comes to home renovations, there's nothing more important than getting the kitchen right. So you've got two options. Have a crack at it yourself and then get someone else in to fix it, or get the team at Infinite Joinery and Designs in from the start to avoid a lot of stress and dirty looks from the better half. If you're thinking of renovating your kitchen, give Sam and the team at Infinite a call straight away. Specialising in kitchen renovations, they can also take care of new home joinery fit-outs, renovations, laundries, wardrobes. They have 3D design software, and Sam alone has over 20 years experience in joinery and project management. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, or phone Sam on 0429 291 008, or by email, which is sam@infinitejoineryanddesign.com. So don't be like me, thinking you'll save a few bucks and have a crack at it yourself. Call these guys in so you can sit back and watch the experts go to work.
On this week's show, La Trobe senior coach, teacher, mad sports lover and wine enthusiast, Nick Hazartzidis. Nick takes us through his journey, his successes and challenges and things that he's learned along the way, and what he now puts into place in his own teaching and coaching. We speak about getting into sport at an early age, lessons he learnt from being a young man on his own having to fend for himself, and how sports clubs became his family and the successes he had as a sports person. We then speak about his path into coaching and teaching, what he loves about it and what challenges him, and he gives some great insights into relationship building and helping others get the best out of themselves. From almost driving a car into a Waratah waterfall to evading lions in Africa, this is a hell of a chat.
I was like, of course I'm not going to walk again. Like, that's just the reality, isn't it?
And the doctor that rang Mum said, oh, we've saved your son's life.
And I remember looking up and just saying, that wasn't out. And he looked at me and he said, no, it wasn't. But I didn't want to give you not out because you're my son. And I said, fuck me, Dad.
I just remember her telling us your daughter's got leukemia.
You're in school. Oh, we swapped class a couple of times.
Who's cluier out of the two?
Both got the same smartness. Not real smart at all.
If you are dedicated to something, as long as it's safe and it's not hurting anyone else, I don't think anything should hold you back.
Keep pushing forward, you know. Days get tough sometimes. You know, it does turn around. You just gotta fight for it a little bit.
I was like, why can't we be that 1% that survived? She said to me then, she goes, you were more like me than I ever realised.
The Talk Hard Podcast with Brendan Hinkson.
Nick Hazartzidis, welcome to the Talk Hard Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brendan.
No worries, mate. My pleasure. We appreciate people giving up their time, particularly being that this is a Friday night before a big game tomorrow. I imagine you're normally sitting in the lab, are you, planning the downfall of your opponent on the next day?
You're probably more trying to relax, and probably the hard part about is the waiting.
Yep.
So, you know, Friday nights, you're probably trying to keep yourself busy, you know, watching some footy or whatever sport's on.
Yeah, it's funny you say about relaxing, because, you know, any person that rocks up to my house with grog, mate's always welcome in here, and you're the first person to rock up with a bottle of wine, so
yeah.
I certainly won't say no to that, but that's a tradition of yours on a Friday night?
Yeah, I always like to sit down and have a glass of red on a Friday night just to relax after, you know, a long week of work, but also to, you know, to relax before footy on a Saturday.
And this one is a clean skin, so we can't even really plug it what it is, but it's from the Hunter Valley, you tell
me.
So
Thomas Allen Wines in the Hunter Valley.
Nice. Well, we're looking for sponsors, so if they're listening, they can certainly call out, send a few bottles our way.
Yep.
So how's the season going, mate? Give us a bit of an overview for a start. In fourth position, is that right on the ladder?
In fourth at the moment. It's sort of been, as coaches know, footy season's a bit of a roller coaster. There's been ups, there's been downs. But certainly to be in fourth at the moment, you know, two games clear of fifth is tracking okay.
Yep, awesome. And with a young building side, like obviously you've been through, you know, some tough times as well. Obviously your trajectory is on the up.
Yeah. So the goal, you know, we finished fifth last year, played in an elimination final and lost to Burnie. So, you know, the goal this year is to keep improving on that.
Obviously, we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along. We've got a few things to unpack with you, but we were saying there before, like the thing that I like about getting someone on is when I learn something about them that I didn't know. And I know there's a few things when we go through your story that that people won't know, and some people may be surprised to know as well. But obviously, we're going to unpack the coaching stuff and that as well. But just take us back to the start, mate. So with your childhood, where did you grow up? Are you a Northwest Coast boy?
So grew up. So first few years of life were down in Waratah.
Yep.
So down the West Coast, Dad had
beautiful spot.
Yeah, Dad had the general store there.
Yep.
So, you know, there for a few years, Mum and Dad split up.
Yep.
When we were there, and so myself and my brother and my sister and Mum moved to Penguin.
Yep.
You know, a little bit of time in Penguin, and then the rest of the childhood was in Devonport.
Yep. Is there much still in Waratah? I think there used to be a good pub there, didn't there?
There was a good pub there. I don't think it is. Oh, I can't remember last time I've been there. No, it's still got a beautiful waterfall there. That there is a fence there now that they put up because of me. One day, waiting for Dad to finish work or whatever. Mum had gone into the shop. And I let the handbrake off in the car and it started rolling. I would have only been 3 years old.
Yeah.
And a bloke ran out of the pub, jumped in the car and put the brakes on. So, at that stage, there was no sort of fence. So if you're ever looking down in Waratah where the waterfall is, there's a fence there now because I nearly put the car over
you there. You almost ended up in there, mate. Yeah. Bloody earth, you're almost a statistic. Obviously, sports has played a really big part in your life. When did you start getting into your sports, mate?
It was always sport, even from that young age of 3 or 4 that, I was always watching the footy on the telly whether it's because my brother was 2 years older, kicking a sock down the hallway or a balloon or whatever it was, we just always had balls in our hands. So was always, into sport.
Yep. And what were your main sports? I know you excelled at cricket and footy. Did you play anything else as a young age?
Played basketball all through, primary school and high school. So I really enjoyed that. Dabbled in some tennis.
Yep.
Obviously the main sports were, cricket and footy. They took up a fair bit of time.
Yeah, and they're the ones you sort of tend to gravitate to as a young fella.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it helps that, one's a winter sport, one's a summer sport. So.
Yeah. And you were pretty good from an early age? You showed a bit of promise, did you?
Yeah, I think from an early age, I probably grew a bit quicker than other people. People probably wouldn't believe me when I say, in primary school, even in start of high school, I used to play in the ruck.
Yeah, right.
Because they definitely wouldn't. But I probably grew a little bit faster than others and developed a bit quicker. So, had sort of the athletic ability, probably a year or two above where I was. So certainly helped as a junior.
Yeah. And isn't it funny, in junior sport, we were just talking about it there off air before, but it's those kids sort of get a little bit of a leg up, don't they, that sort of hit puberty or develop a little bit earlier, but then suddenly everyone else catches up to them, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And people that I went to primary school make fun of me now a bit, but I probably started shaving when I was in grade 6.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So, yeah.
Certainly, man-child.
Yeah, and that's essentially what it was,
And so, just again, going back to your childhood, mate, your family, you said, your mum and dad sort of separated at a young age, but there was an opportunity for you to move away there at one stage, and you made a pretty critical decision, didn't you? Can you take us through that time?
Yeah, so the end of grade 8, so I think it was around 2000. My brother had just finished year 10, my sister had just finished year 6, and mum being a single mum of 3 kids was finding it hard to find full-time work. She was working at the credit union down here, and they'd sort of started putting people off, and she was just a casual. So she started exploring other opportunities and sort of found a job in Canberra, a full-time job in Canberra. She had a little bit of family in Canberra, so made the decision to move there, and basically I flatly refused to go.
Yep. What was your main reasoning behind that?
It was really around, so I think, being 14, halfway through high school, and, well developed into sports, so I think I, just made the state cricket team and things like that. I had lots of good friends, good friendship group, being halfway through high school. I just really didn't want to leave that.
Yep. So it was mainly your comfort zone sort of thing, things were going really well for you here. And
So I could understand, my brother Billy and my sister Lacey, who, just finished parts in their schooling, so year 6 and year 10, so they were sort of ready for a fresh start. I didn't want to move away and have a fresh start. I was pretty happy and pretty determined to finish what I've, was going through here.
Yep. You must have been pretty headstrong as a young fella then, because a lot of people had just... And I'd imagine your mum at some stage probably said to you, well, you're coming, that's how it is, but you obviously dug your heels in.
Yeah, and, thinking now, as a parent,
yep.
To think about what would have been going through her mind, and, I'm sure there were times where she said, no, well, you're coming.
Yeah.
But, in the end, Well, I guess I did win out a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And you talked about, you know, her moving away. It would have been hard for her as well. So did she have times when she sort of struggled with you down here?
Yeah, so I think what people probably don't realise is that when she did leave and she was okay, you know, leaving me here, is that she left me with Dad. So Dad was in living in East Devonport, owned the Kit Kat Cafe.
Yep.
So, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, I hadn't lived with Dad, you know, since I was a real little tacker.
Yep.
So she left me there thinking that, yep, I'm okay going and Nick will be fine with Dad. That sort of didn't last too long. You know, it was pretty tough. Dad's partner had two kids of her own and didn't really want me there. So, you know, there was, yeah, pretty tough time there where sort of wasn't sure where I was going to go.
Yep. And how did that feel as a young bloke? Was it sort of scary for you, or did you think that you'd land on your own?
Yeah, it's hard to think about what you feel at that time. It was so long ago, but... Yep.
You probably just keep surviving, going through the motions.
Just surviving. You know, when I talk to Mum now about, you know, how did I end up at the next place I went to, and she said, well, you just found somewhere to go. So yep. So it was actually one of my brother's mates, who I became good mates with because of Billy, and we spent a fair bit of time together, that his mum had agreed to take me in, and
yep.
So moved in. Obviously, Mum had spoken to them, and they were okay with it. So, yeah, that was sort of the start of probably five or six different people that I lived with through from the age of 14 to 20.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what was your contact strategies with your mum? Obviously, burn away. Like, did you talk to her every week, or what did you do in that instance?
It was sort of at the time when, you know, mobile phones were kind of just starting to come in. Or, you know, I remember in grade nine, I did have a mobile phone, and it really was just a text and call. Certainly not what they are these days, but. Yep. Yeah, obviously still kept in touch a fair bit.
Obviously, you know, our childhood sort of shaped what we are as adults and stuff as well. Like, when we were talking there before, you said you learned a lot of life lessons. Can you reflect back on things that happened during that time and things that you put in place now, like what you learned through that period?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I guess when you imagine living with another family and even something as simple as thinking about, you know, what to have for breakfast or that you're hungry and feeling, is it okay to go to the fridge and grab something out of the fridge, or, yep. you know, little things like that.
Because you're in someone else's house.
You're really. In someone else's yeah. house. So little things like that that you probably take for granted now, you know, you're in your own house. You know, little things like that that, you know, made each day, you know, a little bit tougher.
Yep. And you, I suppose at a young age you became pretty independent. That's the word
that I'm looking for. Oh, absolutely. And, yeah. and you know, the lessons I learnt from living with other people and being appreciative for, you know, the kindness of other people is certainly something that, you know, I try to emulate today and trying to, you know, instill in my kids or even the kids I teach.
Yep.
Because certainly throughout my childhood, there was lots of people that, you know, did a lot for me that I'm, yeah, grateful for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it comes full circle, hopefully, doesn't it? Hopefully yeah. you can do that for someone else down the track.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mum having made that decision or allowing me to stay behind as a kid has probably made me the person I am today, and I certainly wouldn't be, you know, in the position coaching the Latrobe or a teacher here or anything without that. And who knows, you know, where I would have or what I would have done if I had have gone to the mainland. It probably also has strengthened our relationship today. You know, she's moved back to Tassie and lives, you know, 2 minutes down the road, which is fantastic, and I get to see her every day. So, you know, certainly grateful for what she's done for me.
Yeah. So was your relationship with your mum strained, would you say, at some stage, or was it always strong when she went away?
I feel like it was always strong, and you know, whenever we spoke, it was fine, but it was never, you know, we were never talking every single day. You know, you don't get home from school and talk to your mum because, you know, she's... you know, hours away. So there was always things that we didn't get to spend every Christmas together or every birthday together or things like that. So certainly, you know, being able to have a home now, it's fantastic.
Yep. You said that the footy club basically became your family during that time.
Yeah.
So which footy clubs were you associated with at that time?
So it's funny, the the day Mum actually left on the boat was the first day I went to La Trobe Footy Club.
Yep.
So I know Zane had spoken about this before when he was
on Longford or something.
Yeah, so you know, junior footy, there wasn't a lot of. It's not like it is now, where club footy is from under 12s. It was sort of school footy on a sad day, and then there was no club footy till you got to under 18. So Zane had sort of, and his dad had known some people up at Longford. They asked if we'd like to go up and have a game on a Sunday. So we started doing that together, which was great. Certainly loved being part of a club up at Longford.
Yep. And he's had some success too.
Yeah, we were pretty successful along the way, which also helps.
Yep.
He had thought about going to La Trobe to have a kick in the under-18s, even though we were only grade 9. A bloke by the name of Malcolm Wright.
Yep.
Had rang me and said he was pretty keen on me coming to La Trobe. He said, yep, you know, look, I'll come pick you up for training and things like that. So the first time he picked me up was from the boat in East Devonport.
Yep.
When Mum left and took me to La Trobe. And, you know, that year, you know, it certainly helped. One, having someone who would come and pick you up and take you to training, because, you know, I didn't have, you know, Mum or Dad to take me to training. So rather than having to, you know, ask the people I was living with, Malcolm would pick me up all the time and take me to training, which got me started at La Trobe.
Awesome. And obviously, I know you're pretty modest. You won't mention this, but I know I will, though. But one of the reasons why he was probably pretty keen to pick you up is you'd won the association best and fairest, didn't you? So you're actually getting a kick, so they're pretty keen to get you on board.
Yeah. Zane and I had a couple of good years up at Longford, and
yep,
you know, we probably pretty grateful that we had a pretty good team, and yeah, it's hard to talk about yourself, but yeah, won a league best and fairest up there, which certainly helps get you noticed. Yep. Yeah.
One thing I was just going back through my chat with Zane, because I wanted to, you know, do a little bit of research for our chat as well. So you guys in your first year of at Longford in the juniors there, you had an undefeated season, but you lost the grand final. Can you talk through like what you learned out of that and why you think you lost it? Because you came back and won it the next year. But did you put any learnings into place going into the next year? Or?
I mean, you're pretty young at that age, but and you're probably just pretty cocky. Yep. You know,
so like, you got ahead of yourselves a bit.
I reckon we just got ahead of ourselves and thought that, you know, we'd beaten everyone all year and
beaten them well, or was it close?
Yeah,
or?
And beaten them pretty well.
Yep.
So you probably think you're just going to roll into a grand final, and during the week you're probably thinking about, you know, just that you're going to win.
Yeah,
that's it. So, you know, going into the next year. And how many times does it happen that teams go undefeated through a season and lose a grand final? So, you know, it probably helped us the year after to go, we want to make sure we win this.
And did you go undefeated again the next year, or did you drop any through the season?
I think we did go undefeated again the next year.
Just had that extra motivator going in.
Just got the job done.
And so back to La Trobe, you said you were 15 at the time, were you? And you were playing under...
So just turned... 15 halfway through that season.
Yep.
But yeah, we played under 18s at the time. So, you know, school football occasionally, but it was more, yeah. So 15 playing under 18s and playing with some pretty good players at the time. So James Westcombe and these sort of guys who were coming through then.
Yep.
But it was just fantastic. And what we knew from being at Longford was how enjoyable it was being part of a club.
Yep.
You know, turning up on a Saturday or a Sunday at Longford, playing your game, and then being able to watch the rest of the games on that day and support your club.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And it's funny that you say it's, you know, sliding doors, I suppose. Your mum had only just left on the boat, and then Malcolm Wright's come and picked you up to take you over to La Trobe, and they did essentially become like your family and your community. Like, one of the things that sort of, I suppose, hit home to me is just how important footy clubs are, because everyone comes with a bit of a story, don't they? Like, everyone doesn't always have it all their own way. So it's so important for a person, any young person, male or female, to have a community around them, isn't it? Can you think back in that time, especially with what you were going through, like how important the footy club was to you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the thing that probably highlights it for me was, so I played that year of under 18s. Zane and I did a pretty big season. La Trobe had just got Ashley Brown down to coach from Victoria, and was lucky enough to make my debut in round one.
Yep.
So obviously pretty excited.
Yep.
It was probably 5 minutes into the first quarter, and Zane's mum was actually like one of the trainers, and she's run out to me to give me a drink or something, and she just said, "Oh, look over there," and Mum was there.
Yep.
And so I didn't know the club had, you know, paid for her to fly down to to watch my first game. So
that's unreal.
You know, that, and you know, just part of the story, I guess. But obviously pretty thankful to the Latrobe Footy Club. Yeah.
And you had a pretty good game. Like, I remember going to that game. You know, I was just saying, you know, there was a bit of a hype within the paper, I think it was. Like, this young fella that was still in grade 10 or whatever you were, just debuting. So you kicked 6 goals that day, did you?
Yeah, kicked 6.
Just a lazy 6.
Just a lazy 6 on debut. Yeah, so, you know, it's a pretty memorable day. But and even just thinking back to sort of the guys I played with on that day, so I think it was, you know, in a forward line with Manny Lynch next to me and Adam Ahern, Brett Jaffray, Spikey Richards, Simon McCall, you know, some legends of the Latrobe Footy Club.
Yep.
And I just remember it was against Deloraine. I'd kicked a couple of goals early and you get a bit of confidence from the older blokes actually, you know, getting around you a bit. But I just remember them saying to the Deloraine blokes that they're just giving you no respect. So keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, pretty memorable day.
Worked out well.
Yeah.
Were you nervous going into the day at all?
Always nervous. But I think at that age, pretty confident in your own ability at times. Like, so I think if you get to that stage where you're probably playing senior footy at 16, you're probably you know, pretty confident in your own ability to be around the men, and be able to perform, I guess. So you know, obviously always nervous, but once you get out there, it's footy. So
just take us through your footy career then, mate. So you played in a few flags and stuff at Latrobe. Did you go over to Devonport at one stage?
Yeah, so it was sort of, I played, you know, footy's a funny game. I played, kicked 6 in my first game. I think I only played another 2 games and then I was dropped. So, you know, it changes pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Played the next year at Latrobe. So I think that might have been 2003 or 2004. And then, so that was Ashley Brown's second year. And then, you know, I played most of the year in the seniors, got dropped for, you know, close to finals and things like that. And I was probably, you know, as a kid, you know, probably disillusioned with I probably didn't think I deserved to be dropped and that sort of thing.
Did you crack the sads a little bit?
Well, yeah, a little bit. And Devonport had shown some interest. Ned was coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had a lot of mates at Devonport that I was going to school with. So, ended up at Devonport the next year.
In the world today, mental health is an issue which thankfully more and more people are becoming aware of and comfortable speaking about. When choosing a professional to help you, what kind of service would you be looking for? At Lonvara, when asked to describe Mel Purcell's service, clients described it as real, compassionate, empowering, friendly, welcoming, inner strength building, a positive, safe, supportive environment, and she was described by one source as an absolute legend who enables change with love. Mel offers clinical counselling, hypnotherapy and a professional service which is tailored to the individual. She has a personal approach and makes sure each client's experience is authentic to their needs while also ensuring full confidentiality. Winner of the 2022 Australian Allied Health Awards for Rural and Remote Excellence, you can self-refer or through your GP mental health care plan. Lonvara, believing in you.
And so which years did you end up playing in premierships?
So I only ended up playing in one for Latrobe, which was 2011.
Yep.
Played in the losing one in 2012, and then, you know, the undefeated season in 2013, got injured in the preseason and pretty much missed the whole year. Yeah, so right.
What sort of injury did you get?
So a groin. Yep. So a bit of osteitis pubis that I just couldn't get right. Tried to come back a few times, but yeah, just couldn't get it right. So
It's a bugger of a thing, osteitis pubis, isn't it? Like, there's not much you can really do about it, is it?
No, it just felt like it just lingered. No matter how much you tried to strengthen your core and things like that, it just hung around. Yep. Just felt like at times you couldn't lift your leg up off the ground. And
obviously there's not much you can do on a footy field in that case. Or you can sit in the goal square and just hope that they sit it on your head, but you can't move very much,
And certainly not in a side that was undefeated for the season. So
it was a pretty dominant era. Well, it's a credit to you that, you know, you even sort of got a run in the side, because they had some pretty handy players going through at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's probably credit to Ned. If I think back on my playing career, I was probably a player that as a coach now, I probably wouldn't have liked me.
Yeah, right. I was going to ask you that. Like, describe yourself as a player. So yeah. This is interesting. Like, you unpack it as a coach then.
Yeah,
like,
so, what was so it about yourself? Probably a player that had a fair bit of natural ability but didn't work hard enough.
Right.
Yeah, you know, in the off-season, I'd play cricket, and that probably didn't get you really fit, so I wouldn't turn up as fit as the blokes who had done a pre-season.
Yep.
Probably just thought natural ability would get me through. So yeah, as a coach, I, and at times it, I just didn't work hard enough. You know, I look back now and guys like, you know, Steve-O and Gavin Woodcock and these sort of guys, the way they worked, you know, if I worked half as hard as they did, you know, I would have been a much better player. It was probably only in 2011 that, I'd played a bit of reserve footy that year, and then probably 6 or 7 weeks out, we got a few injuries in the seniors, and Ned had just said to me, if you train every week, I'll play you.
Yep.
And that so
he always had faith in you.
Yeah. And that was probably a little bit of the faith shown in me, or the kick in the ass that I needed to go, righto. And so, yeah, played the last 6 or 7 weeks, you know, and played some pretty good footy in the finals and won a flag with him. So, so I've probably got Ned to thank for that. Yeah.
But just going back to your mindset in that time then, so did you think that you looked at those blokes that were training, did you think that, you know, you were going to be able to get through on your natural ability, or you just couldn't be bothered sort of working?
Yeah, a bit of both. So, and I think a lot of, so even when you're going through junior talent programs and things like that, and I go back to not being at home with my family, that probably had an impact as well, because like I said, getting to training and things like that was always on your mind, thinking, well, how am I going to get there? And if it became too hard, well, oh, I just won't go to training.
Yeah.
Got a girlfriend and moved in with her family. So that was sort of end of grade 9 and grade 10.
Yep.
And at times, I think I just liked the comfort of being able to go home, you know, spend time with her and her family, and because I was probably missing that from my own, that I didn't go to training as much as I probably should have, or as much as I probably would have if, you know, I was home and mum was annoying me, or I'm a brother and that, and so I think that did play a part. It's certainly not an excuse, it just probably was how I was feeling at the time.
And it's funny how we're all wired different, isn't it? Like, and obviously, you know, the things that are going on in the background, and, you know, we'll talk about you as a coach, because obviously you've got to deal with 40 blokes with all different stories and stuff as well, but obviously that was your main, you probably didn't know it at the time, but that was one of your main drivers. You wanted that comfort of the home life. That may have been more important to you than football. And that's where I suppose the fine line of coaching comes in, because, you know, if you're suddenly smacking a bloke over the head that all he wants is a cuddle and a home-cooked meal because he's not getting that at home, like, they're probably going to go the other way, aren't they? So you've sort of got to try and walk beside them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably, you know, a lot different now to what it was 20 years ago when you actually, a lot of blokes, you know, being a coach now, being a teacher, you need it. You know, they need that. They need to know you care, and they need to know that, you know, if they're having a hard time, that, you know, it is okay at times to miss training for certain things, and that if you trust them enough to know the reasons and they're honest with why they're missing training, that's okay. I probably didn't think it at my age back then or in that time that was an okay excuse, so I never really, you know, talked about why I was missing training, just, you know, I couldn't make it.
Didn't attend, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I think about the 2011 premiership, it was the only senior premiership that I won with La Trobe, and you know, it took me back a little bit to when I was playing at La Trobe. I think it might have been 2009, and Matthew Langmaid was coaching, and it's probably a massive regret of mine that I just up and left. You know, I was playing senior footy under him. I just up and left. I probably didn't even tell him or tell the club. I just put in a clearance, which as a coach now, if a player had done that, I'd be pretty filthy.
Yep.
And have every right to be filthy, and he probably did as well.
Without at least talking to you about it first.
Yep. And that was, you know, me being immature and young and silly.
Had you got the shits with the club at all? Or?
I don't think so. Yep. I think it was more, you know, I was at uni. I was living up at Sheffield. Going to training and things like that, I just got sick of. Trawada down in the Circular Head League. It offered me a bit of money, didn't have to train, and just turn up on a Saturday, get some money and play some footy, and that appealed to me. But probably didn't realise the effect it would have on, you know, or the blokes I was letting down at Latrobe Footy Club. So that's, you know, pretty disappointing time when I think about it. And then when I think to the 2011 Premiership, which is probably a highlight in my footy career, and when the final siren went, it was Matthew Langmaid that was standing next to me. So,
yep.
You know, that's a pretty special memory for me, and hopefully it went a little bit of the way to making it up to him. Because, yeah, I was pretty disappointed in myself.
Yep. Had you ever spoken to him about that or that time? Like,
We had a little bit after that because, you know, we'd sort of said, you know, it was pretty ironic that, you know, when the final siren went, it was us that embraced each other. You know, the pinnacle of footy and probably the lowest point of my footy at times when, yeah.
Did he say how he felt when you left? Did he...
I probably didn't get a chance to talk to him, but knowing as a coach now what that would make me feel, I could only imagine that at the time, you know, how disappointed and you know, at a time when Latrobe weren't going that well.
What was it like at Trawada? What was that league like?
Who do they
play against? Like,
yeah, so Trawada aren't around anymore.
No.
But they play against Irish Town and Redpar, and
you didn't drain them of all their cash. That's not why they went bust.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it was me, but it was certainly an experience. We made a grand final. We lost the grand final. But it was probably the only time I've ever seen a fight at half time between teammates.
Right.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, they're wild down there.
Yeah, pretty wild down there. Yeah. So, that was an interesting story.
Yep. Did both players come out and play all right in the second half? Or?
I'm sure they did come out and play in the second half, but we got beat, so they couldn't have gone too well.
Yeah, it didn't work. Wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
No.
What point did coaching come on the radar for you?
Probably, you know, once I started teaching, always enjoyed... obviously enjoyed teaching people, so natural fit was, I love footy as well.
Yep.
It's probably 2013, 14, I was asked to coach a couple of junior Northwest sides in footy.
Yep.
Just because I was a school teacher, so, you know, you're at school footy or whatever, and really enjoyed that. And so that's when, you know, coaching started. I started thinking, yeah, I quite enjoy this. It was probably something I hadn't really thought about, especially with playing footy, but yeah, that's probably when it started. Yeah.
Yep. And did you start to sort of put steps in place to get there, or was it more, it just sort of evolved organically for you?
It probably sort of evolved a little bit. There was an opportunity that came, I think it might have been 2015, they started the School Sports Australia, you know, Footy Carnival.
Yep.
I think
that's the one that Alex Baldock said that he was involved in.
Yeah, yeah. So Tassie hadn't really sent sides to that for a long time, and that they were, going to send a side and asked if I wanted to be part of it as the Northwest coach,
yep.
You know, for the tri-series and then actually go away as an assistant coach.
Yep.
So that was sort of where I started thinking that, this is really enjoyable, and started learning from, I think, you know, Blair Brownless was the coach that we, of that under 15 side. And
yep. What's he like? Is he the same as Billy, is he, or is he a different sort of unit?
Yeah, just a silly.
Yeah,
but just...
Obviously knows his stuff, though.
But knows his stuff and just a laugh to be around. But, you know, we had a week up in Sydney, and he's a fantastic bloke.
Yep.
And a lot of fun to be around.
Yep. And again, just talking about coaches and stuff, you would have had a few in your time. Like, now that you are a coach, do you sort of take any things that you took from coaches along the journey and put it into practice, or is there any particular coaches that have had a bit of an impact on you? Obviously Ned did, but
yeah,
did you have anyone else? Or?
Obviously Ned did, but I think at that time when you're a player, you're probably not thinking about what the coach is doing too much or what he's doing to be a good coach. Like, we knew Ned was a great motivator and he got us up every week, but I probably didn't look at, you know, the stuff that we did at training or why we were doing certain things. So it probably wasn't until, you know, I started down the coaching line that you started taking notice of other coaches.
Yep.
So probably my first year so after, you know, that year with the state under 15s, it was a school footy grand final on the northwest coast here, and Adam Sanders was there, and I started having a talk to him. He was coaching the Tassie Mariners at the time, and he sort of said he interested in being part of the Mariners next year, and I thought this is great. Like, yeah. I jumped at the opportunity, so that's probably where it started to evolve even further, and, you know, I started thinking probably time to not play as much footy and let's explore this path. And that's probably when I started noticing or taking more notes from coaches. So yep. Being around, you know, an Adam Sanders, a Matthew Armstrong, you know, Robert Devine, these sort of guys in Tassie footy have done a fair bit. They probably shaped me more as coaches than probably the coaches that I had as a player.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say, you know, with your school teaching as well, like the amount of school teachers that also become coaches, like it, and I'd imagine like it's a, I'll ask you, you're probably better to articulate it than me, but firstly, why do you think that is? And what skills as a school teacher do you then put into place as a coach?
I think the natural one is the communication and the people skills that you get from teaching.
Yep.
There's also the planning side of it that, you know, as a teacher, you've got to be planned and have your resources and things like that. I think that also helps being a coach.
Yep.
I know at times if you saw coaches that weren't organised or planned, then, you know, you probably felt like as a player, I'm probably putting more effort in than you as a coach.
Yep.
So, you know, you always want to make sure that as a teacher, you come across to students that you know what you're doing as such.
Yep.
And it's no different as a coach. So I think it's a natural fit.
Yeah. And is there like an element as well of... I know a lot of people get into teaching because they want to, you know, help and mould and shape, you know, young people. Obviously, with coaching, you're dealing with some young people, but you're not all young people. Some of them are fully grown men. But is there that element of helping people become better and sort of helping them move along? Is that
yeah, absolutely. And I think even as a senior coach at La Trobe, you know, when we get people into our club, we want them to leave as better people. So we not only become better footballers, because ultimately that's what we're there to do, teach how to become better footballers so that we can have success as a club. But at the end of the day, if all we do is make Brendan Hingston a better person for having been at the La Trobe Football Club, then I feel like we've done our job.
Yep. And it's funny though, if that's your main objective, sometimes the success will follow anyway, won't it? Because, you know, you're teaching them, you know, the core skills and things to be successful in life, but you can also translate that onto the footy field, you know, working hard and, like you say, planning and doing all the little things to get you where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Talk to us about your teaching. How did that sort of come about? How you got into
So, when I finished year 12 and it applied to uni to be a PE teacher, as we all wanted to be back then.
Yep.
But so even year 11 and 12 was actually pretty tough. Like I, start of year 11 had moved in with another girlfriend. So, you know, another new place to live and a probably bit of freedom at Don College, probably took it a bit far. I think by the middle of the year, I had something like 150 absences.
Yeah, right.
And
what were you doing? Where were you going?
No, I just wouldn't go to school.
Oh, right.
Yeah, like, you know, or if my girlfriend at the time, who was in grade 12, if she had a period off, I'd just go home with her. And because, you know, it wasn't mum or dad at home, you know, I probably got away with it until, you know.
No one to kick you up the arse.
No one to kick me up the arse. And, you know, the footy club weren't kicking me up the arse. So I was probably, you know, getting away with it a bit. So... I think I had to have a meeting with the principal up there at the time to say, look, you need to change your ways a bit because, you know, if you don't start coming to school, then you're probably going to be kicked out.
Yep.
So, you know, halfway through year 11, I thought, you know, I probably need to turn things around a bit because I certainly wasn't a naughty kid at school or anything like that.
You just weren't turning up.
Just wasn't turning up, just took the freedom a little bit too far. And at that age, you probably, probably did a little bit. So, end of year 12... applied to go to you, got accepted into human movement.
Yep.
Which is the PE pathway.
Yep.
Deferred, decided, girlfriend at the time, we decided to move up to Newcastle, so yep. up to where Mum was. So I yep. thought, you know, it's probably time to go up and see Mum and spend some time with her.
Yep.
So I spent about 18 months up there, yep. Which was really good to get away from Tassie for a little bit, do some different things, played footy up there, had a couple of different jobs, worked in the PE store, thought, yeah, this is the life, working in a PE store. This is me. Maybe I could just become manager here and that'll be it. But, you know, that certainly didn't... I think the place of work, that sports car shop, closed down because it wasn't going too well. Yeah, so then we sort of thought, at that time, she wanted to move back to be closer to her family. So became pretty much best mates with her brother, so Craig Holloway.
Yep.
He had thought about going back to uni, so he was just working at Wiley Tiles and thought, I need to do something different. So we both then applied to go to uni just to become a teacher, not a PE teacher. I'd probably spent 18 months going, well, if you think about how many PE teachers are in a school, there's probably that not many jobs about.
It's a numbers thing.
It was essentially a numbers thing. So, applied to go to uni, moved back and started going to uni.
Yep,
to become a teacher.
Yep. This episode of the pod wouldn't be possible without the support of Alex, Sammy and the team at Shearwater Health and Fitness. Everyone needs a little bit of help and support at times, especially when it comes to health and wellness. Not only is Shearwater Health and Fitness supporting the Talk Hard podcast, but more importantly, they're committed to providing Shearwater and the surrounding community with a premium quality health and wellness facility. If you've been looking to take the first step or even the next step in your health and wellness journey, they provide a full class timetable, 24/7 gym, infrared sauna, Normatec recovery boots and a massage therapist. Something for everyone, whether you're a high performance athlete, mum, dad or just someone wanting to help be the best version of yourself. Call in and see them at 24 Shearwater Boulevard, which is right next door to the IGA, or you can check them out on Instagram and Facebook for all the details. And at that young age then, what was it about teaching that sort of appealed to you?
I think always, you know, like Alex Baldock was saying, you probably looked up to a fair few of your teachers and thought they live pretty good lives. They, you know, they still play sport on a weekend. They, you know, have pretty good friendship groups. They are pretty good role models for us. And I just thought that, yep, I could be that for a lot of young kids as well.
Yep. And what sort of teacher are you? For any of your students that are listening to this, they'll have to confirm this.
But yeah, you'll have to confirm this. But I'm probably at the stage now where, I build good relationships with the kids. And I think that's first and foremost one of the most important things. Because I think once you do that and then you set some clear boundaries about when to, you know, when you can have a joke and a bit of fun, because I think that's important in a class, but when it's also time to knuckle down and get your work done.
And you talk about relationships. What are some of your strategies that you use for building relationships with kids? Because again, and we'll talk about coaching because that's, you know, a similar sort of thing, but you've got, I don't know how many kids are in a class. What's the average these days?
Anywhere from 20 to 27.
Yeah, and again, with all different stories. So, you know, they're not all, you know, cut with the same cookie cutter. They've all got different stories. You'd have some that are with carers, some that are with parents, some that are in, you know, child protection systems. They've had, you know, pretty ordinary backgrounds. How do you sort of relate to all those kids on a different level?
Yeah, I think you've got to try and find some common ground or try and find some things that you have in common. But also, like a lot of people on your podcast have talked about, is showing that you care.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're having a bad day, you know, maybe trying to talk to them about something different other than work to show them that you care, because, I think that goes a long way to obviously helping them feel comfortable in the class. You know, we don't know at times what they've had to deal with in the morning. You know, have they had breakfast? Have they, you know, had a hot shower? Have they had a way to get to school? Or, you know, have they had a fight with siblings or mum and dad or carers?
No sleep that night.
You know, during winter, do you actually have heating in your house? You know, you just don't know. So being able to, you know, I guess think about those things and take them into consideration is super important.
Yeah. Is it pretty rewarding when you do see a kid that you know is doing it really tough and one that is sort of a bit of a closed book, but you get them to open up? Have you got any sort of examples of that?
Oh, absolutely. Like, and I think even as a coach as well, when you've got kids who are having tough times and you're able to help them in some way, you know, it might be just that day they just need someone to take their mind off things or to talk about something different other than football or schoolwork. But it certainly is really rewarding when you can help them, even if it's one person that you help. Super rewarding, which is I guess why a lot of people go into teaching or coaching.
Yeah, you feel like you're making a bit of a difference, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Just to divert a little bit, so obviously we want to talk about your cricket pretty quickly because you've had some success there as well. You played in a couple of A-grade premierships at Sheffield.
Yeah.
What's the mindset of, you've spoken about where you've won premierships at La Trobe in football. Is there a different mindset as a cricketer as there is to a footballer going into a big game and stuff? Is it the same principles or is it a different kettle of fish?
Certainly the same sort of nerves, but a bit different in, I guess in footy, you go out there, you get your first touch and you miss a target. It's not like you're off the ground or you don't get any more say in that game. Whereas in cricket, being an opening batsman, you go out, nick that first ball, or you make one mistake. You don't even have to make a mistake. The bowler actually beats you.
Yep.
And
you're done.
And you're done. So the mindset and the nerves around, I think that's why, I got to a stage where I wanted to be an opening batsman because I used to hate sitting around waiting to go and bat. At least I knew that, we won the toss and we're into bat. I knew when I was batting, or if we're fielding, I knew when I was going to bat anyway because the innings was over, we're in.
Yeah. And so did you get more nervous going into cricket than you did into football?
I think I definitely did.
Yep.
Just for that fact that as a batsman, you make one mistake, you're gone.
Yeah.
So it definitely was a different mindset. And on the flip side, probably when you're going out to field, you're probably not nervous at all.
Yep.
To a degree.
Yeah. Because all the pressure's on the batsman.
Pressure's on the batsman. Even when you're a bowler, you can make one mistake, they hit you for four, but
you get another go.
You get another crack at it.
Yeah.
So, it is a very different mindset. So it was probably refreshing that they are different mindsets. Playing one in the winter and one in the summer. Yeah.
And so what was your pathway into playing up at Sheffield? Were you living up there at the time?
Yeah, so before I moved away to Newcastle, as I mentioned before, I played all my junior cricket at Devonport.
Yep.
Played some state underage cricket with Zane. And moved away, came back, 2 years later, and a few of the guys that I'd played with at Devonport, so Gary Miles, Richard Miles, Lee Dawkins at the time, Ben Milburn, some of these guys had gone up to Sheffield.
Yep.
And I was pretty good mates with Gary, and he just said, why don't you come and have a game up here? I'd been away from Devonport for a couple of years, so I thought, oh, why not? This sounds like a bit of fun, and I'm ready to get back into some cricket.
Yep.
And the rest is history. We three premierships in a row after, a bit of a drought for the Sheffield Cricket Club. They'd been on some years of some hiding, so it was very rewarding.
Yep.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing with cricket is, a grand final in those days was over 4 days.
Yep.
So, you play on Saturday, Sunday, and then the next Saturday, Sunday, and you spend the whole week thinking about the result.
Yeah.
Whereas different to footy where it's over in a couple of hours.
Yeah. You got to stew on it for the whole
week. Yeah, you got to stew on it for the whole week.
Especially when it's a grand final. Yeah. You just got to sit on it. You wouldn't sleep much during the week, would
you? That's it. And depending on the stage where, if you were out or you still had to bat and that sort of thing.
Yeah, or if you were not out, you wouldn't want to come back in on the third day or whatever and get out first ball.
Yeah, that's it.
Nervous about that as well.
Yeah.
So just with your coaching transition as well, did you coach at La Trobe basketball there at one stage? Was that your first sort of foray into senior coaching?
It was. I think I might have been at the time assistant coach at La Trobe anyway, footy.
Yep.
And then,
so why the path into basketball? So, it's just sort of interesting that you go down that
path. Yeah, so Jamie Smith took over as coach.
Yep.
So he was teaching at Rees High at the time, and we became pretty good mates just from teaching together. He knew I had a bit of a passion for coaching. He sort of accepted the role and said, do you want to come on board? If I take this job, will you come on as an assistant coach? And
yep.
And I, like I said, from an early age, I always really enjoyed basketball. So, yeah, so thought, why not? Yeah.
Were you nervous going into a sport that you hadn't sort of had a lot to do with? Or the next part of that question I was going to ask you is coaching, doesn't matter what, like there's certain skills that you can apply to any sports. Like obviously having a bit of a know-how of the sport comes into it later on, but are there certain key things that any coach can coach any particular sport if they've got certain sort of criteria met?
Yeah, to a degree. Yep. Like when I mentioned earlier about communication,
yep,
and being prepared and things like that, I think that adapts to most sports. And certainly basketball, you know, Jamie probably had more of the X's and O's type things that he wanted to do with the side, but the communication side of things I could help out with, and sort of probably the motivation type of things, but or even just opposition analysis, yep, type things. You know, my couple of years with the Tassie Mariners, part of my job as an assistant coach was opposition analysis. So, you know, I'd prepare things on the Northern Rangers for that week, who'd been in the best players, who some of their good players were, what their skills were. So, yeah, you know, I'd look at other teams on the Northwest Coast in the basketball and how they're going, who's scoring their points, look at their stats and those sort of things as well. Yeah.
And again, the other part of that question, were you nervous at all going into a sport that you hadn't sort of had much to do with?
Probably not really. You know, being in La Trobe and around La Trobe a fair bit, I knew some of the players anyway, and I'm pretty avid NBA supporter, so, you know, I probably watched enough basketball that I had a fair idea anyway.
Yep. Yeah. It's interesting you say, though, like with your skill set, we'll talk about you as a footy coach in a second, but talking about that relationship building and stuff, I suppose there's an argument to say that you could get a coach that comes in and knows absolutely everything about the X's and O's, but if he's not a good relationship builder and he can't communicate properly with the guys, you're probably going to have more success from a bloke who can do that but's got very minimal sort of tactical nous.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You could know everything in the world, but if you don't have the trust of the, you know, the guys you're trying to coach or you know, you've talked about before, that if they don't know you care, then...
Yeah, people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Yeah, that's it. So if they don't have that, then doesn't matter how much you know. If they don't buy in to what you're trying to sell,
yep,
then it's certainly going to make it hard for you to get anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. We've stolen that quote from Zane Littlejohn. He'll be listening to this, so he'll take credit for that one. So shout out to Zane.
Yeah.
So talk about your steps into coaching La Trobe Footy Club then. So how long have you been coaching La Trobe for?
So this is my third year.
Yep.
I spent the 3 years before that as an assistant coach to Troy Davies.
Yep.
So it was sort of towards, you know, I'd finished with the Mariners, had a year off. You know, Courtney and I had got married. We'd done a fair bit of travelling during that year and you know, thought about, like, Wade was obviously coaching La Trobe at the time, Wade Anthony. Thought about that. I always wanted to get a senior job. I thought that was my next progression.
Yep.
What
was it that attracted you to senior coaching?
I think just the time with the Mariners, being an assistant coach,
yep,
you know, learned a fair bit, yep, from that, thinking I could now put that into, you know, my own coaching philosophy and coach my own side.
Yep.
You know, being able to coach some of the Northwest sides and having control on, you know, game day over that.
Yep.
I thought I had the skills to do it. Got to, yeah, the end of that year and the La Trobe job came up. So, you know, I wrote an application. I talked to Zane a fair bit about what are the sort of things that, you know, I need to put in my application. So I applied for that job. Didn't quite get it. You know, they appointed Troy and sat down with Gav Woodcock and Rodney Brett at the time, and the plan was that Troy would coach a couple of years and then I would take over after.
Okay. Bit of a succession plan, so like Collingwood.
Bit of a succession plan, yep. Yeah, initially.
Yep. So how did that sort of sit with you? Was that sort of something that you were pretty keen on, like learn for a couple of years and then step into the business?
Yeah, I certainly wasn't. Yeah, you know, I was probably disappointed at the time not to get the job, but it probably took the pressure off having the top job and thought, well, if I can work, you know, with this group for a couple of years before actually taking over, then I thought that could be beneficial as well. So,
yep,
you know, you probably... initial disappointment, you try and turn around into a positive.
Yeah. And so obviously talk about when you did sort of move into coaching. So how did you go, like, initially to start off with? Was it something that you slid into seamlessly, or do you look at it now and there's a few learnings there that you think, I probably could have done that a bit better?
I think even to to this day, coaching last week, you're always learning. Yep. So, and I think to be a good coach, you've got to be pretty critical of your coaching and be able to reflect on what you did well, but also what you did wrong or what you could do better.
Yeah. What do you find the most rewarding thing about coaching is? What do you love the most?
I think it's just seeing blokes improve.
Yep.
Just seeing guys. So, from taking over 3 years ago to where some guys have got to now,
yep.
That's really rewarding. But even like we talked about before, actually just seeing guys become better people,
yep.
And grow into good young men, even some of the older ones. So, I think of a Jade Smith, pretty young captain at the time when I took over, but has turned into a fantastic role model now.
Yeah.
Yep. So, and I feel like that's pretty rewarding too as a coach.
Yep. And what are the tougher parts? What do you sort of struggle with? What are the hardest things as a coach?
Plenty. Yep. trying to motivate guys who at times probably aren't self-motivated.
Yep.
So I think one of the challenging things as a coach, as a senior coach, is and at a club that hasn't had a lot of success lately, is trying to build belief, but also, trying to instill good habits in them that are going to help them get better when at times they probably don't see the rewards.
Yep.
You know, our first 2 years winning only four or five games all up, at times it gets hard. The man management side of things that we talked about before, where you've probably got 40 guys that you're worrying about during the week. Are they going to be at training? If they're not there, why aren't they at training?
You're like a father to 40 kids.
Well, you are in a way, and then trying to follow up, and this bloke hasn't turned up at training, and then all of a sudden you're crabby about that. So it's certainly a full time job that you don't get time to. We don't get a full time go at it.
Yeah,
yeah.
What about the pressures of coaching a young team and a team that's building? Is it something that is the club sort of? I suppose the club would always say that they're patient with you, but do you feel impatience from people, or do you feel pressure for success, especially from a club that's had such success recently?
Yeah, I think we sort of think about our time at the moment, or certainly when I took over, similar to 2009, when Latrobe were pretty, pretty not rock bottom, but down towards the bottom, and then, with a good under 18 group, they sort of have moved through, 2010, a premiership, 11 premiership. So we try and look at it that, we're in that period now. There's always going to be outside noise about, they should be going better than they are. And those outside people probably don't see the internal stuff or the amount of work that goes into what you're trying to do or see how much improvement is actually happening. They probably just look at the score.
Yep.
On a Sunday in the paper or whatever, and make their opinions on that. So, it's hard to block that out sometimes.
Yep. Do you have any strategies that you do with that, or do you just like not read the papers, or you just you certainly still read
the paper and that sort of thing, because you're interested in what they've got to say.
Yep.
It's whether you can block that out and make sure it doesn't affect, what you're doing during the week or your coaching.
Yep.
But I think the important thing is having good people around you.
Yep.
And, good supports at the club, which we have.
Yep.
That, if there's, stuff that isn't going right, it's coming from them, and we're having that discussion and we're keeping it between us, not people outside the club.
So, it's interesting, who you take your feedback from. I know when I was talking to Trent Keep the last time, he made a really good quote. It said that if you wouldn't go to them for advice, why would you take on board their criticism?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Trent and I have talked a fair bit about coaching. I remember a period where he was up on the Gold Coast and having a pretty tough time, and I was in a pre-season here, and we made an arrangement to catch up every Monday to chat over the phone.
Yep.
And he probably doesn't know how much that probably helped me as a coach, just to have someone who's probably removed from the club a bit but understands what you're talking about.
Yeah, the fundamentals are still the same.
Yeah, to get through, frustrations in a pre-season for me on, if players aren't at training or whatever. So, those supports are, they're pretty important. Absolutely. Actually vital there.
They are, for sure. We're pumping everyone's tyres up to this one, mate. He'll be listening as well, so yeah, he'll get a big head about that.
Yep.
As long as he doesn't bump his head into anything in the meantime. Yeah. Where have you improved as a coach, would you say? What's been your biggest improvement over the journey?
I reckon a lot of people say, and so Trent's dad Shane would probably say, I'm too nice at times.
Yeah.
So it's probably trying to find that balance between knowing when to give a spray and who to give a spray to, and in the right way that you're going to get the result you want out of it.
Yep.
So I think that's probably where I've improved a bit. Yeah.
Yep. How do you go with giving a spray? Have you given some good ones?
Probably not yet. Probably still early on in my career to have given a heap. There's been a couple, but certainly, you know, at times I sort of think, you know, and I've said this to them, I can rant and rave all you want, but at the end of the day, if it's not player driven and you guys aren't motivated to improve and look after each other and play as a team, then you're wasting your time anyway. Yeah. So if you're coming to training during the week because I tell you have to, you're there for the wrong reason.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So I think sometimes, you know, there's a time and place for a spray, but I think it's probably overrated a bit.
Yeah, and look, you got to really pick your mark too, don't you? That comes back to that relationship building. You can give some blokes a spray and they'll go back into their shell, whereas other blokes you can give, Ned said that, you can give some blokes a spray and you know that it's going to motivate them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can give Jade Smith a spray and I know the result's going to be, you know, in the right way.
Yep.
Other blokes, you probably got to go back to, you know, I use a fair bit of video analysis. So we video every game and then I go back and, you know, cut clips and we review it during the week and that sort of thing.
Yep.
So if I need to get a point across to Brendan that you're not working hard enough, all I need to do is find a clip and go, hey, Brendan, you know, your opponent is working so much harder than you.
Yep.
And look how many times he's got the ball.
Yep.
And for me, that works so much better than a spray at halftime, because I might spray you at halftime and you might not even remember what I'm talking about or the centre bounce that I'm talking about.
Yep.
But if I can show you on film. Yeah.
Got evidence, yeah. How scary is it in this day and age how much we rely on modern technology? It's not till your phone dies or the Wi-Fi or power goes off that you realise you'd be lost without it. Well, recently, my phone decided in its old age to die and stop charging, and on a weekend, no less. So what do? Rather than waiting to speak to the network providers or retail outlets, which can be painful within itself, give Brad or Katie a call at Greenies Apple Repairs. That's what I did, and they had my old phone as good as new in hours. Greenies take care of iPhones, iPods, iPads, and pretty much everything else, and they won't cost you an arm and a leg. So next time you're stuck back in the dark ages with no technology, contact Greenies Apple Repairs on 0401 229-220, or you can contact them at www.greeniesrepairs.com.au or find them on Facebook. Now just to get onto this busted screen. We talked about relationship building as a teacher. Do you have any strategies as a coach that you employ? I know when I was talking to Kurt Byard about that, he said that it does consume a fair bit of your time as coach and getting to know your players, because obviously that's vital, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's a delicate balance as well, because you want to be able to, you know, spend downtime with your players. You don't want it all to be serious. You know, you're pretty serious on a Tuesday, Thursday training, and then on a Saturday.
Yep.
Finding time to actually spend downtime and get to know people. Without that, you know, at local footy clubs, probably the only time we get that, you know, is on a Saturday night.
Yep.
And at times it's probably not the right time after a few beers.
Yeah.
You know, it is to a degree, but you also don't want
to... There's a time and place for that as
well.
There's
a time and place for that as well. So, you know, trying to get to know them, you know, away from footy as well is super important. And I know, you know, Nick Hayward spoke on here about, you know, the mental health side of things and getting to know, you know, even what they do as jobs. And, you know, if they've had a good day at work, so you walk into the footy club and... You know, on a Tuesday night and, you know, try and ask blokes out, you know, if you had a good day and try to be upbeat, because that might be the best part of their day. So.
Yeah, absolutely. How much time does it take out of your week being a senior coach? Probably have to ask your wife, will I?
Well, one, ask the wife, but the education department probably doesn't want to know either.
Yeah.
So,
you should be marking reports and you're figuring out who's going to play fullback this week.
Oh, absolutely. It takes a fair bit of my time, and you know, I'm pretty lucky that I've got a wife that's really supportive of my passion of coaching. You know, for instance, on a Tuesday, I go to work every morning, meetings after school, straight to footy training. I'm not home till 8:30, so, you know, don't get to see the kids on a Tuesday once I leave, and she's with them all day. And, you know, it's nearly the same on a Thursday and then on a Saturday. So it's sort of essentially 3 days out of the week, and then might be on a Monday afternoon that I'm watching the vision back. And then you're planning for training that might be during some school time. So it's a real delicate balance. And, you know, like I said, I'm pretty lucky that Courtney's supportive.
Yeah, awesome. Is it difficult? I'd imagine a couple of the blokes that you've coached over the journey you also played footy with.
Yeah.
I know Jiffy would be one of them. I'm not sure whether there's any others on the list that you played with. Is that a tricky balance if you've played footy with them, or is it actually a strength? Is it easier to coach blokes that you've played with?
Yeah, I think it probably is tough to a degree to start with, but I think because I had probably 3 or 4 years between, you know, sort of finished playing senior footy in 2014 at La Trobe to when I was back there in 2018. Obviously, there's still, you know, the Jiffies and Gav Woolcock was still there at the time, and and these sort of guys. But I think the amount of respect we actually had for each other as people is that I haven't found it as hard as you probably think it would be. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with having a young side, how important is it to have those older blokes around them? You sort of call on them?
Yeah, super important. I wish, you know, some of our younger players or most of our group would have the dedication that they have to training and preparation and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, Ned spoke about it. I know what I'm going to get every week.
Yeah.
You know, I know what I'm going to get every week from an Adam Jeffrey. You know, I know what I'm going to get every week from a Sean McCrossan. That they're going to give me 100% effort at times with younger guys. You know, with maybe what's going on at home or whatever.
It's a maturity sort of thing.
Maturity thing. Did they have a late night? Can they be bothered today? You just don't know. So it's nice at times to have that sort of safety blanket of some guys in your side that you know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And in coaching, we a lot of the time I've spoken to people about who their mentors are and who they sort of speak to. You don't have to name names, but do you have people that you do talk to that you confide in, and if you've got an issue you can speak to behind the scenes?
Yeah, like I said, Trent Keats, one that I talk to a bit. Probably, I'm not ashamed to say that, like Andy Lee, coach of Burnie, we talk most weeks.
Yep.
It's really refreshing. You know, there's only six blokes on the coast that coach what we coach at a senior level.
Do you talk to him the week leading up to playing, Burnie?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, we do. We obviously don't talk about who we're playing in what positions or whatever, but, you know, he's going through what I'm going through.
Yep.
So, you know, whenever we have tough times, we get the phone to talk to each other or, you know, talk about different sides and what they did against us. But it's just nice to talk to someone else who's going through what you're going through.
Yeah. Awesome. And just, again, on mentors, like La Trobe has got a fantastic mentoring program where you get, I've seen on social media, you get the under 14s, is it? And do they sit in the coach's box with you?
Yeah. So I've done it a few different ways. So in the past couple of years, it might be Brendan, you're a senior player. This week at our home game, you've got Jack from the under-14s.
Yep.
You'll meet him at the gate. His parents will drop him off at the gate. He'll come with you and sort of spend the day, you know, leading up to the game with you, come to the team meeting, be part of that.
Yep.
Be part of the address before the game and that sort of thing, sit on the bench, which is great. You know, we've had some players graduate from that under 14 program doing that on a Saturday to play senior footy in my time since I've been there, which has been fantastic to see.
Yep.
Gavin Woodcock's taken that over this year, and it's a little bit different this year. He brings a group of 5 or 6 to a home game. They spend some time looking around the club. They go in the history room. Greg, president, meets them, talks about some of the history. The ladies give them a free lunch out of the canteen.
It's always good for kids.
Which they love. Gav takes them up to where the commentary box or the viewing box is up there. That's probably their highlight for the day, which is funny.
Yep.
That's kids. But then, they're part of our team meeting. And then after their team meeting, I'll meet with the kids and sort of say, you know, Brendan, what position do you play for the under-14s? He might say, a forward pocket. All right. were you going to take some stats for Alex Diprose today?
Yep.
And so Gav's printed out some stuff for him to take some stats for those kids.
Yep. And they're watching that player that plays their position. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so the flip side of that is this weekend, for recovery on Sunday, our senior boys will go for a little jog together and then go to the under-14 game at La Trobe on Sunday and take some stats for those kids.
Oh, cool.
As a bit of payback. So
awesome. The kids would get a big buzz out of that too, wouldn't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't think the scene, well, some of them probably do, but I doubt whether a lot of them would realise that they are still heroes to these kids, like, and how big a buzz they would get out of just having them around the club. I know Devonport does their one club training and stuff really, really well, so that, you know, they get to run around and, you know, they can... Jake can be kicking it to Quade Byard. Like, he just gets a real buzz out of that. You know, they don't do it all the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just such a... And I suppose it makes the kids feel connected to the club as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly what we want. That doesn't matter, you know, going through 14s, 16s, 18s, that any time they're at the club that, you know, the senior players are approachable and that they can build a connection there.
Yeah. I know a lot of coaches don't like to single out players and stuff, but are you prepared to talk about a couple of your players if I ask you questions about it? Who's surprised you since you've been coaching, like how quickly they've come on? Was there any that have sort of really blossomed that you thought when you first looked at him, he was only going to be at this level, but he's really taken off?
Probably like Braden Scott's one. Like, obviously he's got good pedigree being the Doc's grandson, but, you know, when I was with the Devils, or the Mariners back then, he played in a rep game that he probably didn't get too many touches, that sort of thing. And then he, you know, my first sort of couple of years at La Trobe, he'd done his knee and that sort of thing. But has come back from that and turned into a super player. Yep. And he's certainly one that you can never question his dedication to training and looking after himself and that sort of thing. And and I probably forget that he's probably only, you know, 22 years old.
Yeah.
Still got a fair bit of footy ahead of him, but I feel like he's been part of the journey a fair way, yeah.
Yeah. And what sort of character is he? Because I don't know Braden. Like, is there pressure on him? Like, obviously people know, you know, who his grandfather is, like, and especially playing for La Trobe. Does he ever talk about that, or do you reckon he feels any of that?
He's a pretty quiet farm sort of kid.
Yep. Probably a good thing.
Probably a good thing. After a few beers, he's pretty loud though. and certainly if St Kilda are playing, he's pretty up and about. But yeah, he's a pretty quiet reserve. I actually reckon, you know, to become a better player, he needs to get louder.
Yep.
Once he, you know, he matures a bit more and, you know, he wouldn't have even played 50 games yet, 50 senior games. So,
yep. Who do you reckon sort of flies under the radar for your team? Like, who's a really important player that you really value having in the team but doesn't get the plaudits? Like, an example that I thought of, I remember when they were winning those premierships, is Callan Mann was an unbelievable player, but he was obviously in a midfield with, you know, your James Westcombs, Josh Hollands and Gavin Woodcocks. And I know internally they would have rated him, but you never heard about him in the papers or anything like that. And he was a terrific player. Do you have anyone sort of like that that's a really good player?
I think this year, and he's only come to the club this year, but Jacob Wauchop. Yep. So he come from Deloraine, and in the preseason, so Braden Butler and Sean McCrossan had mentioned this guy to me that they played with up at Deloraine, and said, you know, he's not playing any footy at the moment. You should contact him. Contacted him. He turned up his first night. We're doing the beep test, and so he didn't go too well. He hadn't played for a while, so he's a little bit unfit. Certainly now he's probably one of the most important players in the team. That he works hard, he does the little things, he tackles, and he's a super user of the ball. And he's smart. And I probably think, you know, as a side, we probably lack a little bit of football IQ because we are young.
Yeah,
And he's certainly one that has it in abundance. Yep. Yeah,
awesome. One player I'm going to ask you about is Adam Jeffrey. Obviously, you've spoken about him a little bit. He's a different sort of unit. What's he like to coach? And he's probably never going to come on the podcast, despite me asking him regularly, so this might be the only real pump-up that he gets. But just talk to me about him as a player from a coach's perspective.
Like I spoke about before, you know what you're going to get every week.
Yep.
You're going to get effort, you're going to get passion. It bleeds red and blue. So, you know, that's never in question. Has been a player over my time as a coach, and even when I play with him, that's played all parts of the ground, you know. Pretty reliable down back, kicks the ball really well. Obviously, pretty mercurial forward. Has played on a wing at times, so a bit of a Mr. Fix-It at times over his years. So pretty easy to coach in that sense. Probably And I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying, but it probably over the last few years, footy's changed from, you know, 10 years ago where Adam Jeffrey and Gavin Woodcock, Adam Stevenson could give us a spray as all their teammates a spray and they take it on board.
Yeah.
It's probably not like that now, and at times Jiffy would still like to give a spray. So it's probably a different group of kids now that, they probably don't take to that as kindly as they did back then.
Yeah. Has he sort of adjusted that, have you found? Has he
at
sort
times,
of
but at times the competitiveness or the competitor in him will come out.
They've got to know that it's coming from the right place, though. Like you say,
that's it.
Bleeds red and blue. So.
Yeah, and I think that's what, younger players these days need to know that, you know, if I'm giving Brendan a spray or Adam Jeffrey's giving you a spray, it's not personal.
Yeah.
You know, it's we're trying to make you a better player. We're trying to make the team better.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. And that's what I try to, you know, when we're given vision feedback on players, it's none of it's personal.
Yeah.
It's about making us a better team.
And I was going to ask you about the challenges of a young side. Like, obviously, getting run over at the end is, you know, quite a common story about a young side, you know, with that maturity and, I suppose, the more fit, harder body sort of towards the end of the game and that. What other challenges do you have in coaching, like, a building side?
I think it's the fact that over the years they've lost a lot.
Yep.
So the default setting in their mind is, well, it's just another sad day we've lost.
Yep.
So it's actually trying to change that mindset that when you're in positions to win, you know, that's when you've got to work even harder.
Yeah.
Because I tell you what, when you do win those games, it's a bloody good feeling.
Yeah.
So trying to bottle that feeling from winning those games, you know, in the past couple of years when we've beaten a Burnie, beaten a Penguin, when we, you know, weren't favoured to, the more that happens, the more that belief grows. So, you know, it's easy to say, well, we just don't have the experience, but we're going to find that experience somehow. And, yep. And they've got experience winning situations to be better at that.
Yeah, you're right. Like, they've got to know what that feeling's like to be able to sort of crave it and then put the things in place to get there the next time they have that challenge, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's probably it for the coaching side of it. But another thing that you sent through to me was, as far as your teaching's concerned, you've been overseas a couple of times with kids,
yeah,
which I'd imagine would present a whole lot of challenges. I know myself, you know, just getting my kids in the car to go to bloody Launceston, but how many kids did you take and where did you go? And give us a bit of an idea.
Yeah, so when I first started teaching at Reese, they had been on a couple of World Challenge trips. Yep. So that's a company that runs trips overseas.
Yep.
One came up, you know, in 2013. It was my second year at Reese to go to Africa.
Yep.
And when it sort of got mentioned at school that, you know, we were looking at taking some kids out, I sort of jumped at the chance to go, yeah, look, I'll put my hand up to, I'll be pretty keen to do that.
Yep.
So from there, we sort of had to get picked by the school to be one of the teachers that went. So yep. I was lucky enough to be picked, and 17 kids we took to Africa for a month.
Yep.
You know, and I still remember the plane flight out of Devonport. There was one of the girls that we took who had never even been on a plane before.
Wow. Yeah, right.
And we're on our way to Africa for a month.
Yep.
So, I mean, amazing, amazing experiences.
Yep.
And I think about myself as a parent now going, if my kid was overseas without me for a month, you know, I probably didn't think about what that sort of meant at the time, the trust that some parents had put in us to take their kids overseas.
Yeah. You're just sort of just going through the motions yourself as a teacher.
Yeah, well, just thinking that, I don't know, that you probably didn't think too deeply about that as what you would now as a parent. But, you know, they put a fair bit of faith and trust in us, but I'm sure that the memories and relationships that they built from those trips were pretty amazing. Yep. Yeah.
So what did you do in Africa? Because I'd love to go to Africa. Did you have to go and help out in villages over there?
So, it was sort of in four different sections of a trip, essentially. So we had a week that we volunteered in a school. Essentially, we turned up to the school, and communication in the outback of of Zambia wasn't great, so we turned up and they didn't even know we were coming.
I thought you were just backpackers.
So that was a great start.
Did you have to communicate with the teachers in the school and somehow tell them who you were?
World Challenge were the company that sort of sit over the top.
Yep.
We had, you know, an expedition leader who worked for World Challenge who came with us. Yep. So it was essentially his job to communicate with them. And
he was an interpreter sort of thing.
Well, yeah, sort of thing. Yep. So anyway, they're there for a week and, you know, these kids have just come from, you know, living in Devonport where, you know, things are pretty good to being at that school there that...
Probably didn't even have running water.
So we didn't have a shower for a week.
Yep.
So these kids, you know, a shower was... I took thousands of baby wipes and each morning just wipe myself with baby wipes and within 5 minutes it didn't matter because you were sweating that much anyway.
Yep.
But a lot of these kids at this school were orphans. Yep. So, you know, that was pretty eye-opening first up. We did some teaching there, taught some English, taught some maths, painted some classrooms. So that was an experience straight up. Next part of the trip was some rest and relaxation. We'd gone to Victoria Falls in Zambia, then into Botswana.
Yep.
We unfortunately got to Botswana on Botswanian Independence Day. So essentially we'd organised to get a bus or thought we'd read the bus schedule to get a bus at this time and they just don't run on times. It was kind of like we thought we'd get the bus at 10 o'clock to go to our next accommodation and all the buses had gone at 5 o'clock in the morning because people were there ready to go.
Oh, right.
So essentially we had to try and find someone to take us on a bus. So we found a guy who said, yep, I'll take yous. Spent all day trying to actually do that. One of the teachers, Richard Robson, got locked in a bank because he'd gone in to try and get some money out for us and they'd locked it.
Yeah.
Who knows why.
Yep.
This guy had said, yep, I'll take you. He's radiator. Wasn't working real well, but got that fixed. Anyway, we're on this stretch of road if you looked at Red in Lonely Planet, where we're going, it said don't drive there at night.
Right, yeah. And you're driving there at night.
And we're driving there at night. And we're, as teachers, we're a little bit worried about, that obviously doesn't say Lonely Planet, why? But anyway, driving along about 80 k's an hour, and bang, we hit a donkey.
I shouldn't laugh.
So pitch black dark, we hit a donkey, we had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
Sitting up towards the front and I've got radiator fluid all over me, the kids are screaming. Middle of Africa, pitch black dark, we get out, and not far from where we were was some policemen type thing, and they'd come down and basically said to us, you need to keep the kids on the bus here, and it was like, why? Like, nothing around. They said, well, there's lions.
Right.
So,
get eaten.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So, you know, it was a pretty scary time, some of it, but, you know, pretty funny experiences when you think about it now.
I reckon. And so you went on three different occasions, you said. Yeah. So where else did you go to?
So we went to, 2 years after that, we went to Costa Rica and Nicaragua.
Yep.
And then another 2 years after that, we went to Cambodia.
Yep.
So essentially the same sort of thing. School for a week. Some different fun things, some trekking.
Yeah.
These days now, though, it'd be pretty hard to do with the amount of red tape you'd have to get through to get these organised. Pretty lucky to have had those experiences. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you take away from it? Like, what are the biggest things that you learnt from you know, being in other countries and seeing other people in the countries and things like that?
Probably just how good we have it here. But how grateful I am that I was given that opportunity to be able to experience different lifestyles, but also being a teacher, being able to take kids to experience that.
Yep.
You know, that they might not... Hopefully it actually gave them the passion to travel more.
Yep.
And to have a bit broader view of what's out there in the world. Yep. Rather than, you know, what we have in Devonport. Yeah.
What was the criteria for the kids to go? Did they have to apply or was it...
So it was essentially grades 8, 9, 10, or even if... Because it was over 18 months planning, it was, you know, if you're in grade 10 this year, the trip was next year and you're in year 11, you could still go. Criteria was just around... I guess, been showing the school values to start with,
yep.
but then also being dedicated enough to fundraise, because obviously it was a pretty expensive to spend a month in Africa. So being able to fundraise and be part of a team and to a degree do some fitness work, because, you know, some of the treks, you know, we spent a few nights in the Kalahari Desert where during the day it was 50 degrees.
Yeah.
In the end, we actually had to get out of there and ring World Challenge and say, you got to get us out of here because these kids have got no shade and it's 50 degrees. So, you know, some different things, some resilience stuff. Because like I said, some of them had never been out of Tasmania before, or let alone overseas. And then all of a sudden, one, you're in another country, a third world country, without your comforts of your family and things like that. Yeah. So,
did you find that it sort of brought a bit of a change in the kids? Like, what did you think that they took away from the trips? Did you notice anything?
Yeah, absolutely. And I still talk to some of them now about the trips that we went on. Yep. You know, I think of a kid, she won't mind me saying, Steph Triffitt, who, you know, probably at school was pretty reserved and that sort of thing. But, you know, when we went to Cambodia, really came out of a shell and you know, we'll definitely travel again because of those experiences. So,
excellent. Do you think they got a better appreciation of you as teachers in actually having to... did they have to teach English in the schools themselves?
Yeah, to a degree they did. I think they got more of an appreciation just being able to see us as normal people.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes sense. So being able to, when, you know, in a time and place, swear.
Yeah.
You know, in front of kids that you wouldn't in a classroom. No. It's not the time and place, but you know, when it's just the group together and things aren't going well, or you're having a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
So being able to show that side of you as well. Yeah. And I really enjoy that with kids. There'd be some teachers who that's not their cup of tea, or you know, camping out with kids or spending a month with kids, that's probably not some teacher's cup of tea, but, you know, I certainly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, again, like you say, it's about that relationship building. You'd think that you'd have better responses from them back at school for going through, because you form a bit of a bond with them, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Did you have any challenges with the kids sort of burn away? Did you have any that sort of broke down and wanted to come home and you had to work through that with them?
Not so many. There was obviously times where kids were, you know, in tough situations where, you know, I think one of them was that, you know, they couldn't have a shower and that sort of thing. Or, you know, one of the places in Costa Rica, all we had for a shower was a well. Then you just pour stuff over your head. Yep. So, you know, tough things like that. There was a time in Costa Rica where, and the only time it had happened, we had two kids who snuck out at night time. So we were on a essentially a little island. And
so they couldn't go too far.
So they couldn't go too far, but you know, walking around daytime there was police walking around.
Yeah.
Just walking around. So, you know, it certainly wasn't a safe place.
Yep. There's no lions.
No lions there. There were certainly alligators and crocodiles in the water, but that was a scary time actually, not knowing where those kids had gone and then out in the dark trying to find them. And luckily we did, and you know, the ending's fine, but what could have been in those sort of countries, was pretty scary.
Did it take you long to find them?
Probably an hour or so.
Yeah.
Like it was, it wasn't a fun time.
I don't reckon. And so you guys were just out, you know, just yelling out in the dark trying to find them?
Pretty much, and walking around, you know. They didn't speak that much English there, so was just lucky to find them down an alleyway. You know, a couple of teachers went that way, one went that way, and one teacher stayed with the kids.
That's pretty much all I've got for you, mate. I've probably drained your brain and drained your glass of red anyway. So hopefully it's been a relaxing experience for you. It's not something that's been stressful for you, because, you know, obviously we want you to put in a good good show on as coach tomorrow. So I might even sneak down the road and have a bit of a look at you. So.
Yeah, no, certainly enjoyed the chat and love what you're doing with the podcast.
Thanks,
you know, I certainly listen to all of them and you know, you're doing a great job.
Cheers, mate.
And thanks for coming in and telling your story too, mate. I think it's another good example of just when people see people that are successful, you just don't know what they've gone through in the background. And I think your story, it's got a lot of learnings to come out of it as well. You know, the times that you fended for yourself, and
obviously, you know, your ideas and how you've articulated, you know, what you want to do for La Trobe Footy Club. I'm sure they're on the right trajectory. And
really enjoyed this chat. We're probably both lucky we didn't end up half cut by the end of it. Bloody oath, that was a good one.
Thank you. Cheers, mate.
Some great learnings to come from this one. Some of the things that I took out of our chat was that everyone's got a backstory, and just because someone isn't meeting your expectations of how they should perform or act, often it's the underlying reasons for this that you just don't know. So maybe ask a question to get a better perspective on where they're at. Another thing is how important it is to have a community or group to belong to, especially people who might not have this at home. Whether it's a sporting club, common interest group, or whatever, people need to belong somewhere, and often these groups become their family. In a leadership position, you need to show care first when building relationships, and again, to steal a quote from the great Zane Littlejohn, people don't care what you know until they know that you care. Thanks for listening, and as always, if you can suggest anyone that can come on the pod with a great story, make sure you hit us up and let us know.
As Northwest Tassie is a remote area, I just want to quickly tell you about a great organisation doing their bit to help the rural community deal with mental health and suicide. Rural Alive and Well, or better known as RAW, R-A-W, have a mission to build healthy and resilient rural and remote communities to reduce the prevalence of suicide. RAW specialises in providing a proactive outreach and one-on-one support service, which addresses situational stresses and increases protective factors to minimise the risk of suicide. RAW is non-clinical, genuine and non-intrusive. The service is confidential with no fees for participants, and it uses a person-centred shared goals approach. RAW adopts a culturally sensitive, strength-based and collaborative approach to delivering services. Their team come from a range of backgrounds and receive training and ongoing support to provide evidence-informed care to people. To access their services, call 1800 729 827. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram, or jump on their website www.rawtas.com.au.